Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's April 14th, 2015. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in New York City in the East Village. And we've got a special show today. We're talking about beer and chocolate. We've got some great guests, including Daniel Sklar from Fine and Raw, James Tai, who's studying for his Master Cicerone, Tess Rose Lampert, our expert pairing expert, and Rich Castagna from Bridge and Tunnel Brewery out in Queens. So Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. If you have any questions for our guests, Maggie's live on Twitter at beer_sessions. So, and you can also follow us on Twitter. So this is a great show. We've been talking about different food and beer pairings this winter. We did a beer and cheese show. Next week, we've got a special New York City hot sauce preview where we'll be tasting Lagunitas beers with some hot sauces. So Daniel Sklar is one of the great food stories out here in Bushwick in Brooklyn, and it seems like a natural fit for a beer show. So, Daniel, we met at the Rockaway Beach beer event in 2012, right before Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, that's right.
We sat out and had coffee while we did an event with 20 brewers out there. And so what did it take you to open a chocolate factory out here in Bushwick?
Blood, sweat, and tears. Maybe some bicycle accidents included in that. A lot of good friends. A lot of good friends and a lot of support. And some crazy dreams.
Well, I'm a big fan of beer and chocolate. You know, sometimes we do tastings with beer or cheese, chocolate, bacon, kind of these basic food. I call them basic food groups. But you know, Tess and James, you guys have done a lot of work with pairings and tastings. I mean, what is it about chocolate that goes so well with beer?
Well, so I work a lot with beer, wine, and spirits, and I will say that the easiest to pair with chocolate by far is beer. And I think the range of flavors and the carbonation really lend themselves to all pairings, and the pairing with chocolate is particularly special.
Yeah, I think chocolate, it's just such an amazing food. I mean, there are just so many different components in it that you're picking up. You know, there's a little bit of butter, you know, some, maybe a little bit of sherry, some vinegar in there as well. And obviously, you know, all the other things that you associate with chocolate, you know, your caramels and, you know, the burnt sugar and the likes.
There's definitely a range of flavors in your chocolate, Daniel.
Oh, yeah.
So what is your like, building block of your chocolate? Because I know you start with beans, but your chocolate is different than any other chocolate I've had in New York City.
Yeah, I would say that we have a very unique, innovative way of making chocolate. Like you said, I start with beans, so I'll go down to Central America and go to the jungles and get beans. And then from there, it's a copious amount of experimentation, which just kind of means I get to eat a lot more chocolate. I think it's something that I can see the flavors that I want to make and that I want to get out of an ingredient. And I obsess about them. There's that, just like a very relentless idea of trying to extract a flavor from a cocoa bean.
I know some people that swear by your chocolate. They won't try anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all natural. Do you have dairy in it?
No, so we do, we don't use any, we use alternative sugars. So I use palm sugar, which I think works very well in chocolate because it's got a depth of character to it that other, just plain cane sugar doesn't have. So the palm sugar is going to caramelize the chocolate flavors just slightly. So that kind of pronounces a lot of the cacao, that the bitterness, etc., that you'll find in the chocolate. I think one of my strengths is balancing out bitterness, because that's really where the hidden gems are. As soon as you can unlock something that is dark and bring it onto a palate where you can where you can taste all the flavors, you know, regardless of what those are. Currant, cherry, raspberry, oak, wood, roadkill, glove, leather, barnyard. I mean, you really, there's more complexity in cacao than in terms of flavor than there is in wine. The thing though is that it's really not, it's not seen that way, because it's marketed as candy. So classically people just take in candy as opposed to looking for flavors. You know, as soon as you pair it up with things like beer, then it becomes so much more apparent, like, oh, okay, you have these chocolate with these flavor profiles, whatever it may be, and then you pair it up with a beer, which you're taking a little bit more time, and then there's a catalytic reaction of the flavors and something else appears, and then then you're like, oh, okay, this is great.
Hey, let's taste some of your chocolates. And to go with your chocolates, we have you're an artisan, we have an artisan beer maker, Rich Castagna from Bridge and Tunnel out in Queens. How are you, Rich?
Good, Jimmy.
So I think if you're an artisan beer maker, and there's a lot of the new real specialty breweries in New York City. What's your take on chocolate and beer and cheese pairings? And beer and chocolate.
I think it's interesting. I thought when you had mentioned the show, I'd brought this vanilla porter, and it was I went during New York City Beer Week. It was paired with a chocolate recipe for cupcakes, and it rocked, you know. And it was, you know, it was great. I mean, I like the idea of pairing, you know, beers with desserts, without a doubt.
And for beer news, are you expanding? Are you opening your new brewery?
Yeah, finally found a space. It's in Ridgewood, Ridgewood, Queens. It's off of Wyckoff Avenue and Decatur, 1535 Decatur Street. I've been in the space. It's been a handful of months now, and I'm in the build out stage now. So, yeah, it's kind of getting down and dirty.
Congratulations,
man. Yeah. So, Rich, that means you're going to have to start staffing too, right? It's not just going to be you anymore, right?
That's on my mind. I'm going to say every morning when I wake up, you know,
Rich is a Superman.
How am I going to do this? You know, like, yeah. How am I going to? Because I've gotten so used to doing it on my own that I've become kind of like fixed on this approach of just leave me alone and let me do it. Yeah. And I know it's not the right approach, and I have to figure out how to expand it and create like a family. You know, it's a new thing for me.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know?
Yeah. Well, this vanilla purge is really good, and I can't wait to try it with this chocolate.
Cool. So thank you, man.
I actually think it's going to pair very well with this chocolate. This is the coconut chunky. Which, I mean, this is an outstanding porter. Great
Tessa
job.
Tessa's smiling.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Yes, I love this chocolate. I'll say that when I first tried your chocolate, Daniel, a few years ago, it literally changed my life. And I've tried other raw chocolates and virgin chocolates and the artisanal chocolates, and this is still my favorite. There is a definite way that you balance the flavors and the texture, and it's amazing.
Cool, thanks.
Yeah. Well, James, you're studying for the Master Cicerone exam.
Yep.
Coming up in May. So we're trying to put you in situations where you have to taste food and beer and talk about it.
Right.
So what would you say about this combination?
I think it works out really well. And, you know, when you're talking about pairings, the fun part, the magic really happens when you get something that's different, you know, that comes out of the two. For whatever reason, I get a little bit of like that lacto, a little bit of that sourness, which kind of like really gives it a little bit of complexity to both of these parts. And I think it's a fine pairing, absolutely.
What do you think, Rich?
I'm definitely catching the coconut, and I got to say, it's funny. My wife, I had offered to her. I said, because she loves chocolate. I said maybe you'd like to come, and turns out she couldn't. But I'm going to say right now, you're missing out.
Tessa's licking her fingers. And then Tessa, what kind of pairings do you do? I mean, you work at Astra Center, and you're doing some other innovative programming.
Yeah. So. One of the things that I do is write and judge for a company called the Ultimate Beverage Challenge, and that's a competition, and it gives me access to a lot of different spirits, and I like to play with pairings with cheese and chocolate. I love chocolate, so I try and pair it with everything, and I mentioned earlier that beer is the best pairing in my experience. It's the easiest, The next best, I think, is spirits. And my favorite to pair with chocolate is mezcal. They both have a stimulating effect. They both come from relatively similar parts of the world, and the complexities of mezcal, which is the grandmother of tequila, for those who are unfamiliar, really pair nicely. And it's also the ultimate aphrodisiac. If you have a date you do a chocolate and mezcal pairing, you guys are going to be feeling really, really good.
Is that why you have your shop, Daniel?
Yeah, up the frisky factor, you know. The chocolate's just a front.
It's a cool place. So it's right around the corner from our radio network. What's the address of your shop?
It's 288 Siegel Street.
It's a great place. You walk in, you can see chocolate making, and it's from bean to, you call it bean to bar?
Bean to bar, yeah. It's all open plan. Like I said, the production space is, there's glass between you and the production space, so you see it. The Hessian bags of beans are just sitting out there, and generally it's like, it's got that nice hum of a factory, but it's also got that Bushwick vibe to it as well.
I'm curious, how long does it take to go from bean to actual bar? Like, how long is that process?
It takes us about 3 to 4 days.
Okay.
Maybe like 4 to 5 days, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah, because it can sit in one machine for 3 days alone, mm-hmm. for certain beans. If they need to develop more in their conching phase, which really takes the longest time, where it's aerating and it's the flavors are rounding out and the edges are smoothing, and right. You know, that can take 3 days in the style that we do it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the bigger operations, I mean, they'll do 2 tons an hour.
Wow.
You know, and that, but that's totally different machinery, and they're just forcing the flavor out. We take our
You're
time.
You're coaxing it out, right?
Yeah.
And letting it.
Take well, it's definitely right. food. I mean, you're right. It's not really just candy. It's a food product.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that's one of the interesting things about coming to the factory and seeing the beans, because most people have never seen cocoa beans. And as soon as you see them, you realize that cocoa beans aren't that far from any other beans, black beans. I mean, I used to work at the Brooklyn Flea when I first started, and I'd have a bunch of beans on the table, and people would walk past and go, oh, those are really weird-looking almonds. You know, so when you see the cocoa beans, you connect chocolate to food. You're like, oh, this is actually a food, or a food group in our case.
I think so, yeah. James. If we were doing a pairing right now, maybe part of your Cicerone exam.
Yeah.
What would some beers that you would recommend to pair with this chocolate?
With this chocolate, it's kind of tricky. Obviously, with the coconut, I'm thinking there, that's where I'd start, and I try to make a bridge with that. You know, when we think coconut, we think lactose, and that usually comes from a lot of, you know, barrel aging beers. But then you have to play off the intensity, and, you know, those beers are going to be really big, and they might overwhelm this chocolate. I always like going with the porter, really, and I think Rich is like, I guess he was, you know, really prescient in what he knew to bring, because, you know, I would go with the porter with this particular chocolate. Yeah,
this worked out perfect.
Yeah,
man, it's excellent. Excellent chocolate.
Yeah, excellent beer.
I was eating it and literally, like, with my eyes closed, focusing on it. It's fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, it just the vanilla porter. There's the perfect pitch on the sweetness to balance out the chocolate. Really
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on.
I mean, we planned this for months, right?
Yeah. I think I need some more of the vanilla porter. Yeah,
absolutely.
So beer and chocolate. So, I mean, what else, James? You're going for a Master Cicerone.
Yep.
It's tested in a few weeks.
Yeah.
What are some of the other areas that you get quizzed on?
So I usually refer to them as pillars. And so you think about five pillars. One of them is keeping and serving. Obviously, we're here talking about beer and food pairing. There's also beer styles, commercial examples within that. And then the brewing process, as well as raw materials. So those are the five really big guys.
You know, so the pillars of knowledge.
The pillars of Master Cicerone knowledge. Yeah, absolutely.
And then it's really hard to get, isn't it? I mean, last year, what, only two people got it?
And that's very rare. You know, usually when you're looking at just the track record of the candidates that are taking it, it's an exam that has a pass rate of about 6% right now. So, you know, nine in the world.
And I know, Tess, you've also been through some sommelier programs and wine programs.
Yeah, I've done a number of different certification programs, which I think are really valuable. My good friend and roommate, Zach Mack of ABC Beer Co. in the East Village, is also studying for Cicerone. So I've done some of the prep work with him. My favorite and most interesting one was when we tasted through the off flavors and the mistakes. I think one of the major problems...
That's no fun.
...in the industry...
I hate that
no,
stuff.
It's not fun. But one of the major problems is people, your beverage directors and sommeliers, if they don't know what they're looking for and they give you a flawed beverage, it's going to throw off the product, the whole pairing, and it's not fair to the product that's flawed or the product that you're pairing it with. So I think the Cicerone is probably my favorite of the certification programs now, even more so than on the wine side, which I think has become a little bit diluted.
What, out of curiosity, what's your quote-unquote favorite off flavor?
I don't think I remember the exact names.
I know you remember the flavors, though.
Yeah, there was one that was kind of banana-ish.
Rotten horse banana.
Yeah, and I tasted it a couple of times, and I was like, well, I could see how some people would like this.
Yeah,
it's interesting because some of the flavors are subjective, more subjective than others. Some of them are like, this is gross, nobody wants this. And others, just like in wine, you know, Brettanomyces, some people like that. A lot of French people like that. Whereas in other countries, if your wine has Brettanomyces, it's 100% bad.
Right. Awesome. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hey.
You're listening to Write It Down by The Landing.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Clay Gordon of thechocolatelife.com, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, did you know that Heritage Radio Network has a Kickstarter out there because we're raising funds to create a new website? We've kind of outgrown what we've done. I mean, Beer Sessions Radio alone has almost 300 episodes, so theheritageradionetwork.org is a place to check it out. There's a Kickstarter, and I just joined up myself, so it's pretty cool. But hey, guys, we're talking about beer and chocolate pairings, and you guys left it off talking about off flavors when you're studying for these exams, like right. Cicerones. Mm-hmm. But Rich Castagna, you know, one of our favorite New York City brewers, you know, I've never had an off flavor from your beer, but when you taste beer, what off flavors are you looking for, or what are things that you don't want to have in your beer?
Well, for the beers that I've done, I'm kind of a fan of Ringwood Ale yeast, and Ringwood Ale yeast, it's kind of known for diacetyl, and you really have to...
Gets a bad rap sometimes.
Yeah, yeast. I mean, it does. A lot of people don't like it, and you really have to give it time to pull its own diacetyl back into itself, and I've had a handful of experiences where the diacetyl level was like scaring the hell out of me that it wasn't going to go away, and then like right at the, you know, the last hour, it scrubbed itself out, and so like I have this kind of similar kind of mild stress whenever I brew with Ringwood Ale yeast, but it always turns out okay. But you really have to let it do its thing. And, you know, the diacetyl thing, when it comes on, it's always, to me, it hits me like a heartbreak. Yeah. You know, like it's ruined, and then all of a sudden it just kind of goes away, you know.
As you develop your beers, how did you settle on certain yeasts that you wanted to work with?
Yeah, I've been brewing for, you know, over a decade, so it's really just the years of just trying stuff out, you know. You know, I go for cleaner yeasts, you know. American ale yeast comes in a lot of styles, you know. But it's just really like the recipes that I've developed and the yeast that I kind of settled on. I think Ringwood Ale yeast was just kind of not a mistake, but, you know, one of those experiments that I just got sold on, you know, because I never really know how far it's going to go, and, you know, it's a little tricky.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of funny because, again, as you were saying, diacetyl, a lot of people just kind of, you know, frown upon that, but in certain styles, it's really acceptable in smaller.
What's the flavor of diacetyl?
So diacetyl, usually when you think of movie theater, popcorn, butter, that's what you get, right?
Well, now we get something different than butter. We get more chocolate. Daniel, what's this next chocolate we're trying? And so, Richie, you got another beer. Let's try the next beer with this.
This one is hazelnut, and I use a hazelnut from Portland, Oregon, which is the best place to get hazelnuts outside of Italy. And we'll make a hazelnut butter with the hazelnuts, and then put that in with the liquor, the chocolate liquor, that is. And then we'll sprinkle some hazelnuts on top. So it's actually, it's not really a dark chocolate. It kind of ends up being sort of milky because of the hazelnuts.
So the nuts act like a dairy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I was in a couple weeks ago, you tasted me on a Nutella-type product you're making?
Oh, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. That's the
sounds
shit,
amazing.
It's crazy. I call it a finitella, cheekily, until I get sued. That's been a really fun product to make. The first batch, I actually, I got some raw cream from this Amish farm in Pennsylvania, and I was mad keen to get at the recipe, and I didn't have the plunger for my blender, so I was just using a spatula, and I blended up some plastic into the recipe, but you know, I still picked around it, and that's when I knew. I'm like, okay, this is definitely a project I want to pursue. Yeah.
So James, if we're getting into a chocolate with hazelnut,
yeah,
you know, how do nuts play into food and beer pairings?
Well, it's, I mean, nuts.
I learned from this too. I don't know.
Yeah. No, nuts kind of, you know, they have like that earthy kind of vibe to it. It's like got these certain aromas, these flavors. I keep on going back to barrel aged beers. You know, a lot of roasts too, because you get these components called furfurols, and you're going to get like a lot of maybe grilled almonds. You know, maybe a little bit of soy in it, and that's going to really kind of pair up nicely with a lot of the nuts that are out there. With this particular beer and food, beer and chocolate pairing, I get a little bit more like it really brings out the roast, you know, and I think it really just kind of balances out, you know, what's going on with both of the elements. And I like
this particular bar is the cacao is half raw and half roasted.
Mm.
It's a blend of those two styles of
right.
Cacao making.
Okay, so that that's probably what it's pulling out, right, with the beer. Yeah,
and talk about working with nuts. Richie, when I first met you, you had a brown ale that you made with hazelnuts. And how did you make that? Because it seems like nuts must be really hard. And Mike from Barrier just walked into this, so we're going to talk about putting nuts in your beer.
Yeah, they go into the boil right at the end, and then I put them in secondary for secondary fermentation. It adds some, you know, but it's also part, it's a lot of that beer, a lot of that flavor profile comes from the yeast, you know. It's a combination of things, you know. I shoot for a very malty beer. The hazelnut is part of it. It definitely contributes, but it's also the base of the beer itself. I'm actually going to be kegging another batch at the end of this week. It's too bad I didn't know that the show, I would have hustled it out and brought it down.
Well, we're happy that you're here. And then, so Mike, at Barrier Brewing, you guys have some new beers, and we'll talk about that later. But have you guys ever tried to make a beer with nuts?
No.
Have you
cocoa, noted? Cocoa, yes, but not nuts.
You've made cocoa beers.
Yes, we do one for our friends at Nunu Brew in Brooklyn.
So do you actually put, tell us what you put in the beer.
I actually don't know. I have to get the actual recipe. I can text the brewmaster, Evan Klein, right now. He's probably going to scold me for not knowing. But I'll tell you that in about 2 minutes.
That's great. And what about cocoa versus chocolate malts? Talking about, you know, in beers, some beers are called like a chocolate stout, but they're often not made with chocolate at all. Right. So, James, and this like Young's chocolate stout, it's usually the malts.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's a chemical reaction. It's a Maillard reaction. So, and same thing happens with chocolate. In the process, you're talking about amino acids and sugars when they come together in the presence of heat, they'll produce all these different aromas. And you know, when you think about chocolate, that's kind of where you're coming from.
So. Rich, would you make a beer with chocolate in it, a cocoa of some sort?
I haven't yet, but I would. I would try it without a doubt. You know, I mean, I'm pretty experimental, so I would do it. Maybe once the build out is done, I'm going to get back to next fall. I'll get back to more experimental stuff. But yeah, without a doubt.
But like cocoa is like a huge thing. I mean, there's a liquor out there that's making. I think it's called Soledad or something. They're making a liquor from the pod.
It's called Solbeso.
Solbeso, thank you.
Uh-huh. What, that's the company's name?
Yeah, and that's the name of the spirit. And I think that's actually made from the flesh of the cacao fruit, which you know more about, Daniel, than I do, because I've never actually seen it or gotten to taste it.
And they're making a liquor?
They're making a spirit out of it.
A spirit?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think it's around 30% or maybe even 40%, so it's a spirit. We at Ultimate Beverage treat it as a liqueur.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really have a lot of chocolate flavor, what most people associate with that roasted bean chocolate flavor.
Right.
But it's interesting.
I have had some liqueurs. I think they were made in the same style, and they don't have a chocolate flavor to them. And actually, the history of chocolate, there's a lot of people who think that the original uses of chocolate were for a fermented beverage, which to me sounds like an alcoholic chocolate beer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But so tell us about the whole chocolate. We might as well get into chocolate. So it's a pod, and
yeah. Okay.
What do you do with it?
So you fly down to the jungle. You rent a little car and you drive into the jungle. You try not to drive into the craters and stay at the hacienda. Wake up at 5 a.m. Jump on a donkey. Go an hour into the jungle, and then you take your machete, chop down the pods, and then you slice open the pods and you scoop out this white flesh, and the white flesh actually tastes delicious. It's somewhere between a lychee and a papaya. Then you'll take all of that and you'll put it in sacks back on the donkey, hour back to the haciendas, and then you take those and you ferment them. It's a wild fermentation in the jungle for 3 to 5 days, and then once that fermentation has happened, you lay it out on the ground and dry them out, and then those beans get put into bags and shipped out to people like me.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's intense.
Yeah you know, I like the idea of, I have a few friends of mine who make beer, and when I tell them about the wild fermentation, they get a little bit scared.
They don't get excited?
No. It sounds like what Mary Izette's doing, speed brewing. It sounds like a lot of home brewers would like to get. I bet you'd like to make some chocolate beans, Richie.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. On the wild fermentation, last Friday, I did a batch with, it was a collaboration with Big Alice, and they came into my space, and we brewed a Saison recipe, and we dropped, we had four 15-gallon fermenters, and we dropped about 11 gallons each into each fermenter, and then we scattered them around Queens with the tops open for 48 hours. So
Queens,
yeah, I'm a fan of
what are you doing? Are you making something for Queens Beer Week?
Yeah, it's going to be for Queens Beer Week.
And awesome. When's that? That's coming up soon.
It's May 9th to the 17th, I believe, and it's going to be a whole bunch of events, including something in Ridgewood. There's going to be a Ridgewood pub crawl.
Hey.
Yeah. First time Ridgewood gets a spot you know.
Are you going to be leading that tour?
My hands are kind of full right now, you know, with the
build out.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll be part of it, but originally we were talking about possibly having my space as a meeting spot,
sure.
But like as a warm up before everybody starts the tour. But there's literally a 50-foot trench and down the floor, and now the bathroom's going to be coming down this Friday, and yeah.
Are you building out your brewery too, Rich?
Oh yeah,
I know you're hands on. I know you, let's go back to basics. You have your licensed garage brewery behind your house in Queens,
yeah,
and you built that out. You worked on the system for a long time,
yeah.
So you're putting together the system for the new brewery.
Well, yeah, most of it is equipment that's not designed for brewing. And so I'm piecing all the equipment together itself. And then I was lucky to, I was kind of going back and forth with people that were, you know, that I needed to help me build it. Like, I went through a couple of architects that wanted to basically take the job over. And every time I told them, look, I don't really want to know your ideas. I have my own and I want to do as much work as I can. The next, like within a couple of days, they'd send me an email saying, you know, this job isn't sexy enough for me and I'm not interested, you know. And I finally found a guy that is basically willing to do all the paperwork and allow me to do what I want. And then I found a guy in the neighborhood who's a boiler installer, expert plumber, as well as a general contractor. And he totally took interest in the fact that a brewery is going in the neighborhood. And so he set it up that he said basically anything that you want to do that's not going to jeopardize my licensing, you can do it. So far he's lent me a crazy jackhammer, and I've jackhammered, you know, 50 feet of two layers of concrete. Me and a buddy put up the boiler room ourselves. We're going to be putting up the bathroom. I've already made a few farmhouse tables. So like their attitude, and I wanted to find guys like this. Their attitude is, look, so long as you're not going to get us in trouble, you can do all the work yourself.
Right.
And so yes. I didn't mean to get on that.
You're the ultimate craftsman for me. You're building your brewery. You're making the beer. And Daniel, we're going to take a break, but we'll come back.
It's funny. On that note, I was going to ask you if you had ever done that wild fermentation in the jungle when you had mentioned that. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's hold on to that one. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You're listening to Cool Boy by Sleepies.
I'm Amy Mills from 17th Street Barbecue in Southern Illinois, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Again, check us out, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. There's a Kickstarter up to help fund our new website. And also, big shout-out, I know some of you have been following the East Village gas explosion and fire. Jimmy's number 43, Stanning's Burp Castles, we all opened on Friday night. And there's a lot going on, including this Saturday. If you like sour beers, it's our annual April Sours event. We have over 30 sours from Belgium, Germany, Italy, and New York at Jimmy's number 43. And Friday night, Transmitter Brewery in Long Island City is coming in with a special batch of slightly sour pale ale. That's going to be pretty great. So Jimmy's number 43 is back, and thanks for our listeners. Thanks for supporting us. So Rich, you're building out your new brewery just like you did your first one. But what was your question for Daniel?
Well, his description of climbing on the back of a donkey and going out and scooping out the cacao and letting it ferment, you know, in a wild fermentation, then, you know, have you ever done that? That's pretty wild. I just think it's pretty wild in general.
Yeah, I've worked on a couple of the farms, so I've been through the whole process and I've done that with the farms. in collaboration with some nonprofits and just helping out.
Wow.
It's real fun. It gets funky. I mean, their fermentation chambers, these big houses, they smell. Oh, yeah.
How do you guys slake your thirst when you're out there?
Good question, James.
Oh, you know, generally there's one beer in whatever country it is.
So it is beer.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Beer is good. And Mike from Barry, so you got... How did you guys make your cocoa beer?
We use the cocoa nibs from New New Brew, and we add it in the cold side, and we cold condition it for 5 days. So a lot of home brewers might add it the end of boil. Obviously, you boil off a lot of what you're trying to extract.
Daniel, what are the nibs?
When you take the cocoa beans and you crush them, those are nibs.
All right, nice.
We all love nibs.
Rich, have you never used cocoa nibs in a beer yet?
Not yet.
We're now moving to spirits. So, Tess, you've also been an educator, and now you're educating people about mezcal, which sounds like a fun job.
Yeah, it is really fun. Mezcal is amazing, and it's kind of taken over my life to some extent, and I'm certainly not complaining about that. When you taste mezcal, you're going to want to take a sip, and then you'll actually get most of the flavor when you exhale after you take the sip. So you want to have a sip, you don't want to chase it with anything, and then when you exhale, the flavors really bloom. And there's so many reasons it goes well with chocolate. One of the reasons is you often find really chocolatey and roasted, always roasted flavors in the mezcal itself, which complements the chocolate and allows the other flavors, those more fruity flavors of the chocolate, to come out and play.
What's great is we went from pairing chocolate and beer to chocolate and spirits. And Daniel, you got excited when we mentioned spirits. Is it something you like to pair with chocolate?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've worked with a bunch of whiskey people, the latest of which I did a collaboration with Jura. And I suppose it's nostalgia because I just love sitting down at a business meeting and someone whips out a bottle of whiskey and I take out a bunch of chocolate. And usually by the end of it, I'm slurring more than I'd like to admit to. And then some event or product happens, and it's there's magic in those two, you know. And plus, we go back to the whole aphrodisiac effect, which I think we should have an entire show.
Is that what you said, Tess? You said mezcal and chocolate's the aphrodisiac.
Both of them are aphrodisiacs, and when you put them together, it's an amazing combination. It's delicious. It really it perks you up, and it's definitely a strong aphrodisiac. They kind of enhance each other exponentially. Another similarity, just because we were mentioning it, is all mezcal is made from a wild fermentation of the agave pulp and fibers.
Well, there's a lot of things you can do with chocolate once you're in that post-aphrodisiac state, but that's another show. It could be a whole show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that's a YouTube.
Yeah. We don't do all that, but hey, you know, you can do a lot with chocolate, and it makes people turned on, you know? And I think chocolate really does, it's great with beer. I think we're all in agreement with that. And James, anything else you want to say about your upcoming Master's Cicerone exam? Any category that you need work on? Questions we should ask you, hard questions.
It's always, you never think you're prepared for it, you know. There's always something you feel like you're missing. So, you know, if you see me on the street, you know, just, you know, tap me on the shoulder and ask me some really esoteric question. I'd really appreciate that.
You sound very prepared for it, if it's any consolation, coming from someone who's living with someone who's also preparing for it.
Well, no,
don't let him fool you with his big words and his high-level vernacular. It's all... Yeah.
Full of front.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, we've been working up into spirits now, and we ran into a special guest today, Ned Wright. So you're the distiller. I know you as Gunpowder Rye, which is something we have at Jamie's Number 43. Tell us about your distillery. Come on. You just walked in the door, too. Everyone's just walking in the door tonight. We got Barrier here now. And
everybody around.
Do you know why they all came, Daniel? It's because they all wanted to try your chocolate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
I heard there were free samples. Is there?
Speaking of which, just if I can butt in here, with this chocolate, this is a smoked salt. And the way to taste it is you put the salt on your palate and you let it melt. So the salt opens up your palate and the smoke comes down over the open palate.
That sounds like something that I would do in an aphrodisiac situation, you know? Nobody knows where I'm going. I'm done. I love chocolate, so. Thank you, Maggie. So tell us about your whiskey, man. Come on, I just met you today on the street.
Literally. Yeah, I know. This is
came by in a sales
fantastic,
call.
Yeah.
Got you on the radio.
I know, wham. So we make Gunpowder Rye up in Portland, Maine.
This is a it's an older style, sort of pre-prohibition style of whiskey. This is a Maryland style rye whiskey, which is something you really don't see a lot of these days. Best of my knowledge, we're one of maybe three distillers in the country producing this style of whiskey, and it's a rye whiskey in that it's got, you know, more than 51% rye, which is what defines rye whiskey in the U.S. This particular style calls for a lower percentage than the Midwestern rye. So this one is a 70% rye. Pulls it down out of the peppery, spicy realm, that classic.
Wait, go back. What's a Maryland whiskey and what's a Midwestern rye?
Yeah, so a lot of what we see for rye whiskey these days is more of a Midwestern variety and tend to be pretty high rye, that classic pipe. Peppery, spicy rye whiskey. That'd be, you know, your Bullet, your Templeton, High West, things along those lines. There'll also be certain categories that will have some corn in there. So flavor-wise, kind of kissing cousins with bourbon. The old Maryland ryes and Pennsylvania ryes were just rye and barley. So this one's 70% rye, 30% barley. So by lowering the rye content, you bring it down into this herbal, floral realm for rye whiskey, and then it finishes with this nice barley slug that's reminiscent of an Irish whiskey or scotch.
It's nice. I appreciate you came over, Ned.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
So it kind of works. So Daniel, what's your take on it? You like the mezcal with your chocolates?
Yeah, definitely.
And what about rye whiskeys?
Superb, fabulous. Yeah,
that's a great answer.
Thank you. I'm kind of drooling to get at this gunpowder right now. Maybe the proof's in the pudding, right?
Yeah. All right, and everybody, thanks for coming and joining me out here. It's a tough show because when we get into certain food and beer pairings, we kind of go into unexplored territory. But we're trying to push ourselves because we had a great show with Julia Hertz from the Brewers Association talking about food and beer. We had a show recently about beer and cheese, and we're trying to push ourselves a little bit because we really feel like the next frontier for craft beer is food and beer pairings, and I feel like that we haven't really done enough about it. And I know Mike at Bear, you've done a bunch of beer dinners.
Yes.
What's your take on food and beer pairings in general?
In general,
what direction we have to go in?
I think we're in the right direction. People at first would always have the distinction that wine was the ultimate beverage to pair with food. Wine has about, and correct me if I'm wrong, 500-600 flavor profiles. Beer has over 2,000. So the possibilities are literally endless. And I just think, and everybody here would agree, that you can literally, any course of the meal, beer is a perfect complement to whatever dish you're putting out.
Great. Tess, anything else you want to say?
Thanks for having me. It's always such a pleasure. It will be hard to beat this one next time that you ask me to come hang out with you because there was chocolate and mezcal here, and it really doesn't get better than that for me.
You're pretty great. Yeah. And James, you know, again, your master cicerone's coming up. Right. How is it tasting spirits with chocolate as opposed to beer and chocolate?
It's a different experience, but it's pretty awesome nonetheless. You know, I mean... I have some gunpowder rye actually in my home right now, one of the three ryes that I have. So it's really nice to just kind of have some of that.
That keeps you going when you're studying, right?
Indeed, yeah. Sometimes you need something just to take the edge off. You know?
And then Richie, too. So you've tasted two spirits and your beers against these chocolates. As a brewer, what's your take on it?
I'm all about pairing. I think a lot of some of my stuff is on the sweeter side, and I like to pair it with sweeter items as well. I'm glad we got the chance to do it with the porter. I've yet to do it with just straight chocolate and the porter in it. And yeah, it was great.
And we're gearing up for Queen's Beer Week, which is starting in May. So Ned Wright, Gunpowder Rye, it's New England Distilling, right? So give us a quick thing. What are some other pairings that you've done with your rye whiskey, other foods or dinners?
Chocolate is definitely a slam dunk. I mean, they whiskey and chocolate's just they play very, very well together. Other things with you know, certainly desserts with a cream focus on them goes very well with certain distilled spirits, and it's a little bit trickier than with beer when you're pairing spirits because some of the flavors are very strong and intense, and the ethanol can be a bit stripping in there when you're playing with like the fats and the food and things. But I enjoy spirits with grilled foods, things along those lines. But dessert's a slam dunk.
That's all you do. That's all you do is drink whiskey. I know.
But you're up. To fit in some rum and gin, and you know.
You're in Portland, Maine. You're also near our friends at Allagash.
Yes.
So you got a cool scene up there.
Absolutely. There's a lot going on in Maine in general, and Portland specifically for brewing, distilling, food. We've got somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think, 10 brewers in Portland proper, 3 distilleries, countless restaurants. So,
well, I appreciate meeting you today.
Thank you for having me.
In the future, we're going to do an all Maine show because there's a lot going on up there. And Daniel, it's kind of your show tonight because it's beer and chocolate. You're the chocolate.
Yeah.
How about summing it up for us, if you were going to go to a little party tonight and mm-hmm. bring your chocolate,
yeah.
what would be some of the drinks you'd want to serve with it?
Oh, well, I think the ensemble at the show today has been pretty on point. I'm really a big fan of rye. I don't drink a lot of mezcal. I have friends trying to influence me to do that, and I think I'll be more susceptible to their suggestions now on, because this mezcal that we tasted today has been pretty phenomenal. I gotta say, the coffee cream ale that we just drank, that's
Bridge and Tunnel.
Bridge and Tunnel, that's gonna be my drink of the summer. That is the ultimate summer
Richie,
drink.
Pour us also a last one of that so we can close off on
yeah
that.
Seriously, I mean, I'm like, what, coffee cream ale in like a hot summer beach day? That's I just want to dump a bunch of ice cream on top there. And
well, I tell you, all the fancies that Daniel's talking about are real. If you get up on the L train and Morgan stop in Bushwick, right there is Fine and Raw Shop. You can go in, you can sample, you can see the work they're doing, and you can buy the bars, which are awesome.
Yeah. And generally, we've got a bunch of cool experiments going on. You know, when you came in, we were working on the Finitella. I'm working on this other thing called Coconut Dulce de Leche, which I want to call unicorn milk, but my crew won't let me. it's really also like it's just a great product. When people try that, they freak out.
I think your chocolate, I could probably get psychedelic, right?
Oh yeah,
it takes you somewhere.
Oh, definitely. That's right. It's legal in DC, soon in New York.
Cheers. And then Mike, any last words on the barrier? You know, you've made coconut beer. What are some of the new beers you guys have?
I got a few new beers that we're featuring right now. One is called Atypical IPA. Atypical IPA. Little play on words. It's a 7.2% ABV IPA. We feature Chinook hops, Simcoe, and a little bit of Sterling. And I like to call it a cross between our Money IPA, which is more tropical, and our Dune Grass, which is a little more dank, piney IPA.
So and some of your top accounts in New York, where can I always get Barrier?
Jimmy's 43. any of the Beerly legal bars, so like Fool's Gold, the Jeffrey, Alewife. We're on a Cooper, so like very heavy presence, Lower East Side, Midtown, Brooklyn, obviously. We've got a nice presence in South Brooklyn, Cobble Hill area. So you can always go to 61 Local, our good friend over there, always have us on. So,
well, it's great. I really want to thank everyone for coming on the show. A lot's going on. It's April, and we're in New York City. So you can visiting us. Check us out always, Beer Sessions Radio and the Heritage Radio Network. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Daniel Tess, Rich, James, Mike, and Ned for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, who's a new dad with a beautiful little redhead, Cleo Love. And to our engineer, Jack Inslee, and Jeep Tonight. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.